my job to begin by thanking you for remembering that it's not Thanksgiving today, nor tomorrow. It's always tempting to lecture those who are in front of you about the importance of being in class, but you're the ones who are actually here, so it never works. But the important people are here, so thank you for coming. This morning, we continue the faculty lecture series called Dangerous Ideas, and it's my great pleasure to introduce to you this morning K.B. Carpenter Joseph, Professor of Art. K.B. came to Covenant College in 2004, before that earning a B.A. at Hillsdale College, an M.A. in Intercultural Studies at Wheaton College, and an MFA in Fine Art from the University of Michigan. Since coming to Covenant, Professor Joseph has invested heavily in students, helping them learn to value the arts, especially sculpture. Some of you may have even gone to Italy with her to explore the wonders of what it would be like to be an artist there. She has been a strong advocate encouraging our students to appreciate the significance of human bodies in particular. And she is aware of our subtle and sometimes not so subtle ways that we display a profound anxiety about our own physicality. So it's with joy that I received word from Professor Joseph that she would be willing to speak in our series on dangerous ideas and that she would be talking about embodiment. So please join me and welcoming Professor K.B. Carpenter Joseph.
I opted to stand here because I'm talking about the body, and this makes me a disembodied head. So when I meet people, it usually goes something like this. So K.B., what do you do? I'm an art teacher. Really? Where do you teach? Covenant College. Oh, you're a professor. Yeah. So what do you teach? Art. Yeah, right. I mean, what kind of art? Oh, sculpture. Cool. What's your favorite medium? To which I say, the new body. They're like, I'm sorry, what is that? The new body? Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Could you say that again? The nude body. At this point, it usually gets really quiet, and I watch the woman next to me thinking to herself, I don't think I'm going to introduce her to my husband. I've learned to be comfortable with this response, as I view it less as a comment about me and more as a comment about our discomfort with nudity, sexuality, and embodiment. This Christian discomfort has forced me to know my topic better in ways I wouldn't have otherwise. For example, I get questioned about if nudity is permissible in art. What is modesty? What should one think about gender dysphoria? Is cosmetic surgery okay? Really complex questions. Questions that reveal where we are living. But in all my years in study of the body in art and theology, I have realized that the problem lies beneath all of those problems, that lies beneath all of those problems, is that a problem of trying to live out an embodied experience with a lack of understanding about what it means to be a soul and fleshed. We know the soul part well, but we are still very suspicious of our bodies and its earthliness. So suspicious that we have made it the silent partner in our humanity. That is, of course, until it is a source of pleasure or pain. Thus, we live with a truncated view about what it means to be human. And so, we limp along and can never quite get to our destination, at least not in ways that heal or satisfy. So today, as an artist, I'm going to attempt to do what it is I always attempt to do in my work, to reveal what is currently hidden. I want to lay a foundation for discussing embodiment in general so that we can better discuss what ails us in our embodiment in particular. Our body, it's where we live, which is pretty fascinating to me as a figurative artist, Because what I choose to render on a page or in clay shapes your imagination about what it means to be human. For most people, we can only imagine what we have seen. For example, if you are only ever provided images of very short girls winning the attention of male suitors, you will begin to think that men only found short girls attractive. Or if you were male, you would think that you should find short girls attractive. And unfortunately, most of the images you see and the stories that you and I are told daily give us a very narrow view of human reality. These abbreviated realities are dualistic in nature and sell us a mechanistic view of the body, which is to say that they limit us by telling us that the body is useful only in that it serves to give us pleasure, to build the mind, build the spirit, or do the bidding of the self. That the body is plastic, manipulatable. That the body doesn't have a value in its own right. That the body doesn't have a voice. Of course, to this you might say, well, I'm a Christian, so I have a Christian view of the body, a high view of creation. Amazing. I hope that this is the case. But let me ask you if you have said any of the following things to yourself in the past week. I'm going to pull an all-nighter to get this paper done. I can sleep over the break. Food is just fuel. Who cares if I have a Snickers for breakfast? If I work out more, then maybe I could have a body like X, and then I would be valued and happy. Or it's just my body. Or it's just their body. It's just on a screen. They consented. These statements betray that we believe that our bodies don't matter much, that they can be abused with little consequence to the other parts of the self. It's the predominant belief in American culture and a long-held view that finds its source in Plato and Aristotle. It's a view that tells us that our lives are improved when we are relieved of the burden of our body. Think about it. Isn't this often the tempting and exciting promise of new technological devices? To release us from the limitations of our body, this place, this space, into the great space of salvation where the unencumbered self can exist. The danger of this view, besides being untrue, is that it so easily leads to the objectification and devaluation of ourselves and others. If the body is merely a tool, our tool, then it doesn't really matter what we do to our bodies or the bodies of others, especially the bodies that don't seem to display their valuable thinking part, which is why abortion and euthanasia have become available choices for the problem of unwanted bodies. But you say, I don't agree with that as a Christian. You're right, we don't agree with that. We do stand up for the body and the value of all human life, but we are still pulled toward a dualistic view of humanity. Because while we have a fantastic theology of the body in the Bible, we hear little about it beyond what the church tells us what we ought not to do with our bodies. Little attention is given to what they are for. And in reform circles, there appears to be a great emphasis on thinking our way to our sanctification, as if our soul and intellect were the only spiritual and valuable part. Let's be honest. Don't we tend to be suspicious of bodily experience and bodily pleasures as a source of knowledge and worship? But if the body is suspect, then why did God give us bodies in the first place? Were we not given bodies through which to enjoy the creation, the heavy scent of the first blooms of spring, fresh strawberries on our tongue, or our grandmother's famous pie? Running really hard in the rain with a friend and the belly laughter that ensues when you finally get to where you're going thoroughly drenched. Did not Christ worship and delight through such bodily moments? Do not we? These are spiritual and transforming experiences. You see, Christian spirituality is not freedom from the body, but freedom within the body. Biblically speaking, the body and the soul are unified and are meant to work together for our sanctification and God's worship. When God says, be holy, just as I am holy, this is a call to wholeness, a wholeness that flows from him and through us into a broken world. Likewise, all truth is known incarnationally. That phrase has changed my life. We often say we know something in our head, but that we may not know it in our heart, and we cite this as the cause for the problems with living out our faith. But in my experience, it is not until I live out through my body what I know in my head that it takes deep root in my heart. Because theological truths are abstract and they don't take root in us until we apply them or see them in someone else as a role model. This is why Christ took on human flesh, so that we might have a picture of what it looks like for a human to live into God-intended wholeness and to minister wholeness to a broken world and to a broken people. Our bodies allow us to partake in this. Through them, we have lived experiences, stories of God's truth tested out in our lives. Our challenge lies in whether we're willing to risk it. It feels safer to just know the truth rather than get dirty and scarred and possibly fail trying to live it out. And if you are like me, you will find excuses like, well, my heart isn't in it. It would just be an empty action. Or, no one will notice. It won't matter. But let me tell you something. I have found that oftentimes it is stepping in with my body and committing myself to do what love requires before my motives are perfect that changes me. The act of engaging has some way of straightening out our motives and teaching us something that we couldn't have known otherwise. Our bodies can lead us into loving others and believing truth. For example, do I kiss my husband because I love him, or do I love my husband because I kiss him? I don't know, but my experience tells me it's both. Of course, you are probably also thinking to yourself about how the body has led you away from the truth. And of course, this is the case as well, but it doesn't do so alone. As comfortable as we may be with living with a dualistic view of the body, and as much as we may have silenced the body in our conversation with ourself, it has a way of getting a voice and trying to be unified with the soul. Let me give you an example. I cannot tell you the number of times as a college student I heard one of my friends cry, "We were only talking about really great, deep stuff. And then we ended up kissing. I don't even want to date this guy. How did that happen?" Well, intimacy of the mind wants to be consummated with intimacy of bodies. The soul and body were created to be unified and to unify. So when we take one part of ourselves deep in a direction, then the other one follows suit. That's why when people say, "We're just hooking up, it's just our bodies, it doesn't affect me," I know one of two things. A, they are lying, or B, they have told this lie to themselves so many times that a disconnect has in fact happened, which will make real connection and intimacy in the present and the future difficult. This strong connection between body and the soul is why habits are so powerful to the negative or to the positive. In the case of the negative, even if we change our mind about something, our body remembers the old habit or feeling, and it will still impress it upon us, even when we have resolved in our mind not to do the other. This is why Paul says, "I do what I do not want to do." It's so easy to fall back into old patterns if we do not engage in a new pattern with the whole self, body and soul. Contrary to mechanistic, secularistic beliefs, the body isn't neutral or bad, but it is leading us toward or away from our goal. It's true, the body can be limiting, and that can be frustrating. We feel that by its materiality and vulnerability, it's holding us back. I feel like we have this underlying belief that this should not be the case. As though in heaven there will be no constraint, or that in the garden Adam and Eve were meant to have limitless bodies, to be like gods. But it seems to me that it was the desire to be without limit that drew Eve to the tree. As I've grown older, I've begun to see the constrained body as a positive thing, because it creates a human scale and specificity to our lives. We are constrained by our location of our body and its abilities. We are forced to learn to love these people, this mountaintop, this present task, To be unconstrained feels like a nightmare, an abyss of generality. Think about it. We love and want to be loved in the specific. You never want someone to love you in general. It feels like an affront, cheap, and genuine. You want them to love you, all your beautiful and your broken bits. The body also limits us by its need of rest, food, shelter. My desires and goals are constrained by 24 hours in a day, and my body's need of time to sleep, eat, and relax. This seems vexing at times. Who hasn't wished for more hours in a day? But when my body finally falters in exhaustion or illness, my pride is pruned, and I am reminded that I am limited for a reason, principally that I'm not God, so that I might have a need of God, and I might get out of his way so that he might work. God and my body remind me of my vulnerability, that I'm not an autonomous free agent. We hate that in our culture, don't we? Vulnerability, dependence, need. But it is in fact at the heart of human flourishing, because we were created to be in need of God's help and provision and the help and provision of others. Because our bodies require community. They are formed in community, first by two persons, and then linked to our mother for 9 months, and finally, if we are so graced, into a family and a larger community. And in this, we bear the image of God, because we were created out of an act of the self-giving love of the Trinity. The Godhead gives and receives love in its members, and out of that overflow of love has created us. He did not need us. It was an act of pleasure and of love. And we were intended to do the same. We can only find our purpose and full potential by living with others and for others in self-giving love. We find ourselves by giving ourselves in specific acts to a spouse, a friend, our family, our community. It seems counterintuitive, yet when I feel most free, most happy, is when I give most of myself. We feel impoverished when we feel we have nothing to give, or when that which we have to give is not received. And this is why in our society, aging bodies and disabled bodies feel a pain that runs deeper than the skin. And why we silence them, because they remind us of our need, our limitation. Yet Christ said he came to heal the sick, not the well. Our desire to be well apart from him and others may be our undoing. Which leads to the question, how do we do this? How do we repair the relationship between our bodies and our souls? How do we live as whole persons like Christ? With difficulty, daily, specifically, full of need. It will look different for each of us, but I will share some of what I have discovered along the way. First, we can affirm the communal body. Unfortunately, the wealth and space the West has allowed us, our bodies and our lives, it has allowed us to become too private and individualistic. We benefit from seeing, experiencing, bumping up against the messy lives of other embodied persons. Nothing gets in our way like another body. And living in proximity to one another creates daily challenges to love and do and honor in the challenge of the mundane. It is good when it is done with people of all ages, especially the very young, who remind us how enjoyable a body is, and the very old, who show us the natural course of embodied existence and how to lean into the Lord and others when our bodies become ill and decline. It is also helpful to be with healing bodies, birthing bodies, breastfeeding bodies, working bodies. They remind us of all the amazing things the body does, and that the body is not lowly or disgusting because it isn't always presented in a way that is visually appealing or most comfortable to us. We would benefit from touching one another more in rejoicing, mourning, worshiping, daily greeting one another. Touch reminds us of our interconnectedness. There is a power in touch. Our entire church embraces one another in a sung benediction every week. It is the living out of the Eucharist, becoming the body of Christ. It is my and many people's favorite part of the service, and this time of singing and touching is spiritually palatable. It grows us in a way that wouldn't happen if we did not embrace. Touch that honors and dignifies gives life. It is a physical symbol of the interconnection between people, and we have a lot to learn from our brothers and sisters in collectivist cultures on this one. When they love, they show it. When I worked in Asia, it was so interesting to watch how people displayed their inner relationship by the proximity of their bodies and touch. You knew friends were close by how often they were at one another's houses, doing everything together, how they walked with arms linked, how they sat close to one another on the couch. It was as if physical distance expressed the distance in the relationship. To be honest, the proximity was hard for me at first, but you know, it became one of the big things I missed when I came back to the States. Our bodies are so isolated here. We are so suspicious of touch and the body communal. We have allowed our fear of prurient behavior or the possible appearance of it to kill our communal embrace. In so doing, the only touch, the only unclothed bodies we see displayed before us are on a screen and are often sexual. Our fear has caused the very thing we feared to be the only available reality. The curative is to once again embody and display life-giving touch and living in our bodies alongside one another. It will be a healing balm in our lives and to others. Next, develop a personal and corporate theology of the body with the help of the Holy Spirit. This will change your life. It certainly has changed mine, my perceptions, and my interactions with others. I recommend Pope John Paul II's teachings on this subject, as well as those of Christopher West and John Smith. Or you could also take one of my figurative studies classes where we always talk about this. Participate in the arts. Learn to read images so that you can decipher their messages. Decide what images tell you true stories of flourishing embodiment. Embrace them. Let them work themselves on your imagination. Notice the images that tell you false stories. Reject them. Engage in countercultural acts of image making that affirm our embodied existence. Slow down. Notice the earth and our earthliness. You are, after all, part of the creation. Sabbath from technology from time to time so that you know the power it has to shape you. Another great help to me has been the practice of spiritual disciplines, habitual practices of fasting, prayer, celebration, acts of service. These train your body and soul how to work in unison for God's purposes. They train the self behind the mask, so when the mask comes off, Jesus is there. The holy habits are a lecture in and of themselves, of course, but I do recommend the works of Dallas Willard and Richard Foster. Remember, they are habits, and they take time to form, but in the end, they will form you. It will be uncomfortable and inconvenient, and you will fail, but Christ will use them to change you. One of my favorites is the discipline in saying in your mind, light of Christ to you, to everyone you encounter in a day. It produces a sanctification of your gaze. It's hard to objectify people for your own ends after you have just pronounced Christ's love for them and to them. The pure in heart shall see God in each person before them. I would also encourage being involved in creative acts. We are made to create with our bodies and minds. Find physical ways to be that actively engage the body and make it creative. Things like gardening, cooking, knitting, building stuff, dance, drama, sports, play. Such acts affirm the body and consecrate the creation. Make art or learn how to be an appreciator of it. I have discovered, as have most of my students, that the study of the human body and how to represent a human in its fullness as valuable, dignified, glorified, changes the way you look at other people. Because when you spend hours studying, appreciating, practicing what it means to represent another person in this way, which is a very difficult task, that way of looking carries into your life outside of the studio. It's a habit. So, which brings me back to the beginning of the lecture about what I do and why. Yes, I love to ponder and study and represent the human body, especially the nude. Why? Because it's an amazing creation of God, and its study helps me to see others as God sees them, whole, beautiful, redeemed, valued, capable, vulnerable, watched over, loved. It evidences Christ and causes me to love God and others more, which is the whole point of being here in the first place.